You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13. The pride, passion, and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show, Hour 3 podcast.
Welcome back. We have reached the second half of the show, and it's been a couple of days since we've spoken to Mike Griffith, who covers the Dogs so well, and we'll find out everything that has been going on lately as the Dogs are in the midst of spring ball. Kirby Smart's challenge to Stetson Bennett. So let's talk about that with Mike Griffith. Mike, good to have you on. Let's begin with Bennett. You pick it up from here in terms of what is in store for him and what the quarterback room looks like after him.
Yeah, well, I mean, Kirby Smart's not going to lower the bar, Paul. I mean, this is not a, as Kirby put it, they're not the defending champs. That's over. This is a team that has to scale the mountain again, not try to stay on top of it. And he challenged Stetson Bennett last week. Said they were challenging him to go to class more, challenging him to, quote-unquote, do the right thing, not make boneheaded decisions. Very sharp tongue from Kirby Smart with Stetson Bennett. And then in the practices that followed, Thursday and Saturday, Kirby gave some opportunities to Brock Vandegrift and Carson Beck with that first team. So Kirby sending a message. There's going to be competition in every position, including quarterback. And he's going to have some demands for Stetson Bennett to raise the bar and set the example for the Bulldogs.
Griff, beyond that, it's never too early to get a feel of what you're seeing and hearing, especially hearing, because sometimes you can't really see that much. So what's the vibe from the spring drills so far?
Well, there's a huge vacuum, a leadership vacuum, Paul. I mean, you had 14 guys at the NFL Combat. We documented that. A lot of team captains, a lot of leadership went out the door. And that means players returning have to expand their roles, do even more. Again, I think that's why Kirby went at Bennett. I still think he's the quarterback, but I think this is Kirby's way of making sure everybody realizes, hey, nobody's job is safe. I mean, there's a real sense of urgency here. And I understand the Georgia fans will celebrate. They'll party like it's 1980. But look, as far as in that locker room and on that field, those players understand they've got a long way to go. Now, this team will look similar on offense. Brock Bowers is back. Stetson Bennett, A.D. Mitchell, Ladd McConkey. I think the running game will be very sound. This is a powerful offensive line. But defensively, you're probably losing three first-rounders off that D-line. New household names need to emerge. Jalen Carter, Zion Logue, linebacker, Jamon Dumas-Johnson. Who's Pop? Don't know who that is? You will. Hits like a ton. A lot of young guys needing to step into roles because Georgia wants to stay up here for a little while. They don't want to be the LSU that just dropped off the face of the earth after Joe Burrow. Kirby Smart aims to show that his infrastructure is solid enough for Georgia to stay atop the East and take down Alabama in the SEC championship game.
Yeah, and I know that that's what you're saying, but I've talked to a lot of people in Tuscaloosa. And in spite of what happened in Indianapolis, Mike, nobody thinks that's going to happen. I mean, this is a really different Alabama team than we've seen in at least last year, not the year before. But there's just almost – I don't mean this to sound disrespectful because I'm just saying it as a host, not as a fan. But there doesn't seem to be any concern about Georgia this upcoming season from Alabama people.
Well, I mean, Alabama's done a better job of reloading and staying on top in the game than anybody in college football has in recent history. I mean, I think we'd have to go back to maybe the Nebraska dynasty of the 90s, and even they didn't win as many national titles as Nick Saban. So, when you're Alabama and you've got a quarterback like Bryce Young and a lot of returning talent, I understand why Alabama would be confident. They won that SEC championship game decisively. They took arguably Georgia's most explosive receiver away in Jermaine Burton, who wants to play and that sort of pass attack. So I can understand why Alabama, and they've got other hurdles before they get to Georgia. They got to beat they got to beat A&M and that oil machine monster that Jimbo Fisher is building down there. And, you know, Sam Pittman in Arkansas, they have more in Arkansas than just Walmart these days. Their basketball program thriving and Pittman being a – I understand why Alabama's not worried about – well, conversely, Paul, Georgia truly not worried about Alabama. Kirby Smart right now focus Oregon against Dan Lanning, his former quarterback. That's a losable game. The SEC East is not going to be gift-wrapped to Georgia like it was last year. We saw that returning talent, all those seniors that decided to stay. You called it in the offseason. You knew Georgia was a championship favorite. I called it. A lot of people called it. This time around, Georgia's got to build. Georgia has to get through a more difficult East. Tennessee is rising. The hype and the hypele is real. And Kentucky bringing back the quarterback and the running back, Chris Rodriguez, Missouri, the wild card, maybe JT Daniels, a candidate to transfer there. You know, Florida and Billy Napier and the Nick Saban starter kit. How does that grow? How does that take off? So there's going to be more obstacles for Georgia and Alabama before they meet again in the SEC title game.
Okay, a couple of things. I mean, whenever you're rambling there, I just have so many thoughts. The Nick Saban starter kit, you've heard the reaction to that. Since we had you last, it hasn't been good. A lot of people have cracked back at you, from my friend Buddy Martin to others. It just seems like a low blow, really.
It's accurate. I'm not saying it's bad. I mean, it could be good. I mean, Georgia had a Nick Saban starter kit with Kirby Smart, right? I mean, he came here and brought a lot of the things that Nick Saban did successfully to the University of Georgia and planted the seeds, and you've seen a program build here. I just don't know how much Billy Napier really knows. I mean, I don't know what he did there. I mean, Kirby was an assistant for 11 years next to Nick Saban. He was on the defensive staff 9 years. I think he's got 4 championship rings. I don't know if Billy Napier, I don't know how long he was in Tuscaloosa, but that's not a negative connotation, Paul. That's just saying he's bringing with him some of the things. I mean, he's not going to build Florida based on what he did at Louisiana. I don't remember hearing you talk about Louisiana doing anything fantastic or seeing them on the cover of Sports Illustrated. He was hired based on his connection to Nick Saban. Let's be honest. Who was Billy Napier before he was the Florida head coach? I don't remember seeing him on SportsCenter or hearing Kirk Herbstreit talk about him. You know, he was just another guy out there. But now he's the Gators coach, and he's somebody. Because we know there's a ceiling there, Paul. We saw Steve Spurrier and what he did in the 90s. We saw Urban Myers steal a couple of crowns. That's all my point was, is he's somebody because he's at Florida. He needs to prove to, I think, a lot of people that he's somebody because of the kind of coach he is, not just because of the kind of job that he landed.
Well, he had to get to Alabama, and he got to Alabama by way of Clemson and a couple of other places. Let me go back to something else you said a minute ago about it happened so fast I couldn't write it down. The oil machine Aggies. What is all that about?
Well, I mean, it's a well-heeled program. I mean, obviously they can spend a lot of money. I mean, they just stole Georgia's women's basketball coach by giving her an exorbitant raise. And hey, that's business, man. To the victor go the spoils, and those who have the money and the power. And you know, to this point, I mean, Texas and A&M both. Longhorns and Aggies have both had a ton of money to throw around, and they don't got much to show for it. I mean, I remember when Jimbo Fisher came to the league, I was among those people that said, oh boy, in 2 or 3 years, just wait. Well, I'm still waiting. Now, what I've seen so far is a show cause penalty and a raise, an 8-win season, and a win over Alabama. So far, I'm not impressed. Now, I'll tell you what I am impressed with is that stadium and those facilities. Let me tell you, they got the resources, Paul. Texas A&M isn't going to be left out in the cold because they didn't have the money to spend for resources or coaches, or now that there's this new collectives model, NIL. A&M's got everything at their fingertips. But you know what? They don't got Nick Saban. They don't have Nick Saban, and Jimbo wasn't able to beat Kirby Smart in Athens when he played the Near East.
But hold on a second. I don't want to say things that are obvious, but Jimbo Fisher worked for Saban. He won a national championship and built a monster at FSU. It didn't maybe stay a monster at the end, but it was in 2 straight college football, 1 BCS game, 1 college football playoff. I mean, you act like he's doing it with some Houdini tricks out there. I mean, they just had maybe the best recruiting class of all time in college football history, and you're sneezing at it.
He won 8 games at A&M in his, what, 3rd or 4th season? I expected, did he really build anything at Florida State? Last I checked, their facilities weren't anywhere near where they needed to be. Did he just inherit a traditional powerhouse from Bobby Bowden?
Mike, come on. You know that backstory. Don't play dumb here. You know the administration fought him. That's not even the point here. The point is he missed the playoffs 2 years ago by one spot. He finished the regular season number 4 in the country. You just kind of blow right past that like you did the last time you were here, acting like Urban Meyer didn't exist at Florida. It was nice of you to mention Urban again this time. Thank you.
No, I was just mentioning that the ceiling at Florida was in the 90s when they won 7 out of 12 SEC championships.
Yeah, and Urban won. By the way, you're forcing me to defend Urban Meyer, which, man, I literally wouldn't spit on him if he was on fire. But
you're telling me that Jimbo Fisher –
But he did win 2 national championships in 3 years.
Yeah, well, it was great, and there was a lot of off-the-field stuff that they don't want to talk about that Steve Spurrier didn't have there. Culture is a part of building a program. I don't think Jimbo was hired to go 8-4. I could be wrong. Maybe the A&M fans were thrilled to go 8-4 last year. They beat Bama, and they can walk around and talk about that, and they got a lot of players, and congratulations. But you've got to win games, and you've got to win more than 8 games. And the last time I checked, he was hired to win championships at A&M. Not to just win one game against Nick Saban every few years. And look at the losses they had. My goodness. A&M was a colossal underachiever and disappointment last season, in my eyes. Because to me, that's a program that has everything. They have the great state of Texas and all of those recruits. They've got facilities. I mean, these facilities don't even look real. They look make-believe. They're so beautiful and scintillating and giant, and everything's bigger in Texas except for the win total. I mean, you got to do more with than 8-4. If you've been there 3 or 4 years, am I missing something here?
No, you're not missing anything, Griff. You just got a new kid to pick on. It happens to be the Aggies with all that money, and I think a year from now the conversation that we're having is legitimate. But let's see what this class looks like. Let's see how they filter into the program.
Oh, he needs 5. So you need 5 or 6 years. Well, let's give him another 6 years.
I mean, you also just kind of skate over the fact that they lost a quarterback in the second game of the year, too. I mean, things were not perfect in Aggie land, but they did something before your guy, Kirby Smart, did it after about 100 tries. I mean, Jimbo Fisher did beat – he was the first assistant to beat Nick Saban.
Yeah, that was impressive, and that was good, and I suppose that can justify – $74 or $82 million contract or whatever they paid him. You know, again, I say, you know, good. That was a big win for A&M. But listen, he was hired there to win a national championship. He's got resources that coaches dream of and will never have. I mean, it took Kirby Smart until this year, you know, just to get a football building on par with half of the SEC. So Georgia's had to be fighting this battle without the resources themselves. I mean, Jimbo's walked into Aggieland, and I mean, they got it all, man. They hired one of the better, assistants off the Georgia staff. One of the recruiting analysts, I should say. I mean, listen, they go out, they just buy everything. He's got. I just don't want to hear any excuses for A&M. I'm tired of it. I'll tell you this, Paul. This is why, because I look at what Sam Pittman did at Arkansas, making less than half as much money without the resources, and I look at how quickly Sam Pittman had success at Arkansas. And it should make A&M embarrassed that they're still where they're at after 4 years with Fisher. I mean, wouldn't you agree that Sam Pittman has done a much better job in a shorter time at Arkansas
A&M should be,
than Jimbo has at A&M?
Hold on. I was about to wrap this up because we've gone over. You said A&M should be embarrassed?
Compared with what Sam Pittman in Arkansas, they've done much more in a short. Look what he took
A&M
over.
A&M should be embarrassed with the job. Listen, Griff, we do have to end it here. By the way, for those who enjoy this, Mike and I will be touring. Our first show is April 27th at Caesar's Palace in Vegas. Mike, thanks so much. It's always entertaining. We will come back. Appreciate it, Mike. Man, we had the break because we're like 20 minutes over here on this interview. We'll be back right after this.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
And we're back, and Philip is up next in Memphis. Hello, Philip.
Hey, Paul. Great to talk to you again.
Thank you.
I called to talk about one thing, but I was on hold while you were talking to Griff, and I would like to throw out an anecdote about the A&M recruiting, if I might, before
sure.
I get to my topic. As everyone knows, A&M had a great recruiting class this year, particularly among the offensive linemen, where they signed four or five of the top offensive linemen in the ESPN 300. One of those linemen, about 2.5 months before signing date, posted or tweeted that he was done with A&M. He didn't see why anybody would really want to go there. A couple of weeks later, and to their credit, A&M never stopped recruiting the guy. A couple of weeks later, he got real interested in A&M and became a frequent visitor to the campus and ultimately signed with A&M. The interesting part of that story is that the 2 weeks after he had first posted that he wasn't interested, he was contacted and told that he could make $50,000 a year if he signed with A&M. And for Jimbo to go crazy and start attacking both the Ole Miss coach and the Alabama coach, is really disingenuous. It's no secret. I mean, you can't hide the fact that A&M is taking full advantage of the NIL, and it wouldn't be a surprise to me if at some point, because of what A&M did, the Congress is going to step in and force the NCAA to put a stop to it. They just bought some players is what it amounts to, and Jimbo can have all the press conferences he wants to, but it's not going to change what happened. Now, let me get to what I called about, please. And thank you for that aside. I appreciate you letting me vent on that. You had a conversation, several conversations, the first hour of the show today about the liberal, alleged liberal bias of professors and somebody, and I've forgotten who it was, somebody said they didn't think that professors were trying to change their students' minds, but that they were just trying to teach. And I would call everybody's attention to the recent outburst, that near riot at Yale Law School, when a handful of law students, and this is an elite group of students. You don't get into Yale just by gradually getting through college. You've got to have a great, great point and a lot of recommendations, good test scores, et cetera. And they had they shouted down somebody who they disagreed with. And what it amounted to was that the students apparently thought that any opinion contrary to what they had been taught or what they believed was evil incarnate and was not to be tolerated. I think that is simply an outgrowth of what happened in my generation when I was in college. The Berkeley free speech movement
right.
began, and that certainly was the product of professors. I had a professor at the little tiny Presbyterian school I went to who graded me down in a term paper I wrote because I had the temerity to use a quote from U.S. News and World Report in one of my term papers. And he said I should have relied on New Republic. I think that's the name of it. There was a magazine.
Yeah. Oh, sure.
I have moderated myself. I don't consider myself a right-wing guy. My father ran for office and won and served as a Democrat in Alabama, And we've been Democrats the whole family, all our lives. But with Biden's yesterday, his tax proposals.
Philip, you know better than I do that being a Democrat years ago does not have the same meaning that it does now, especially in Alabama.
Of course not. I mean, you're absolutely right about that. But there are some, and I know a few here who are, if they're still breathing, they're 15 or 20 years older than I am, if you can believe somebody's that old. They're still dyed-in-the-wool Democrats, and if Fidel Castro won the nomination, they'd vote for him.
Now, is that what they call the yellow dog Democrats?
Absolutely. You've got it right. Paul, I keep forgetting that you're not in Alabama. So I was going to ask you if you had any idea about the Alabama Senate race. Or have you been able to follow
Phil,
that at
let me,
all?
Let me assure you, and you know we know each other pretty well. I may not physically be there, but I'm still there. You know that.
Outstanding.
I am intrigued by that race. I happened to see Katie Britt a couple of months ago and had a long conversation with her. And I won't say any more because I'll be accused of favoring one side over the other. During the Tuberville race, I had a reporter call me and ask me what Tuberville was like as a football coach. And the next thing you know, a lot of these blogs were attacking me for trying to influence the outcome of the race, like I truly cared about the other guy.
Well, I would have been happy if you had kept Tuberville out of the Senate.
I realized pretty quickly that there was not much anyone could do. I think he's safer there, though, don't you think?
Probably so, but it's somebody going to have to give him a lesson in the structure of the government if he doesn't know the three branches.
Tommy clearly missed civics class in seventh grade, but other than that, he's doing a great job. We'll take a short break. Back with much more.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Is your schedule too packed to see a doctor about your erectile dysfunction? Well, with Hims, now you can get treated for ED without stepping foot outside your door. They're changing men's healthcare by providing access to affordable sexual health treatments from the comfort of your couch. Hims provides access to doctor-trusted ED treatment options such as chewable hard mints, brand name treatments like Viagra, or generic alternatives for up to 95% cheaper. The process is simple and entirely online. Just answer a series of questions and a medical provider will determine the right treatment option. If prescribed, your medication ships to you free. No insurance needed. So what are you waiting for? Join the hundreds of thousands of trusted Hims subscribers and get treated. Start your free online visit today at Hims.com/Paul. That's Hims.com/Paul for your personalized ED treatment options. Hims.com/Paul. Hard mints are chewable compounded products which are not approved by or verified for safety or effectiveness by the FDA. Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies on product and subscription plan.
We welcome you back. We are just plowing along here on a busy, busy Tuesday afternoon. Some of you may have seen Ross Dellinger's story today. It's pretty amazing. What Ross has in Sports Illustrated concerning Congress wants to overhaul the NCAA enforcement. Maybe they could just bury the NCAA once and for all. Congress can't run the NCAA any worse than the NCAA, although we'll talk to Ross about that right now. Ross, good afternoon. Every time I see Congress getting involved in anything, including Congress, it makes me very nervous. I know you live in that area, so give us the latest on what you've learned about this.
Yeah, it's we've had a lot of bills over the last two or three years, Paul, that have been drafted in Congress concerning college sports reform. But this is one of the first to really dive into the enforcement arm of the NCAA, which is probably unanimously among every corner of college sports. I think a lot of leaders would tell you is the most criticized arm of all the aspects of the NCAA. So it's pretty interesting that for years we've seen coaches and administrators and athletes even criticize the NCAA infractions process, and now two senators are doing the same thing. And this bill a little different also than the others filed, and we've seen a lot, like I said, we've seen a lot of college sports bills filed and not move. You know, they really haven't gotten anywhere. This one feels different only because it is involving an entity in the infractions process that so many people are exhausted of and believe is a complete failure. And also the second reason, Paul, is it's bipartisan. And not only is it bipartisan, but you have two people on the bill who are high-profile senators who are in many ways complete opposites. And the fact that they came together for a bill maybe shows a little promise that it has a little juice to it.
Ross, who are they and what is their motivation?
Yeah, well, it's Marsha Blackburn, senator from Tennessee, and Cory Booker, Democrat out of New Jersey.
Right.
And, you know, their motivation, first of all, I should say, spending 3 years here in D.C., there's one thing, Paul, and I know I've said this on your show before, that brings together lawmakers on Capitol Hill, and it is the disdain which they have for the NCAA among anything else. There's one thing they can all agree on, and it is that. So both of these senators have been pretty outspoken and publicly chiding the NCAA for injustices, what they call injustices. And one of the big ones for Marsha Blackburn for months, if not years now, has been the NCAA enforcement process. And, of course, she so happens to reside in Tennessee, where two high-profile NCAA investigations are ongoing in the Memphis basketball and in a Tennessee football. On Cory Booker's side, he has proposed, I believe, several legislative bills to reform the NCAA. A former Stanford tight end, he's been pretty outspoken against the NCAA. So I just think, in general, as far as motivation, they want to see changes to the NCAA, and they want to see, and what this bill does is it would shorten and kind of streamline investigations, and it, at least according to the senators, it would bring about a little more equity because the Department of Justice would kind of be lording over NCAA investigations with the right to go through investigative documents and make sure the NCAA is meeting certain deadlines established by the bill, which one, for instance, is investigations can't last longer than 8 months after a notice of investigation has been sent to the school. We've seen investigations, Paul, last 2, 3, 4 years, some of them right now still alive from 2017. So that's one big kind of requirement in the bill that is of note.
You mentioned, yeah, there are a lot of very controversial NCAA investigations. The Memphis one just popped up, and the Memphis people don't ever think they don't believe they've done anything wrong. The Tennessee people feel the same way. For the record, Senator Blackburn went to Mississippi State, although she represents the state of Tennessee right now. Let me get to something that I keep hearing Congress involved with, and I know you've interviewed Senator Murphy before, and there's so many people who are concerned, you know, inside the beltway of college athletics, who are really fearful of Congress right now on a multitude of issues, whether it's, you know, the antitrust issues, whether it's the NIL issues. Can you give us a lay of the land, even beyond what you've already reported on today, of this increasing battle that seems to be on the horizon, or is already engulfed between people on the Hill and those who run college athletics?
Well, let's go back to December 2019. That's when Mark Emmert, and I was there for it, Mark Emmert came up here to D.C. To plead with Congress to create a federal NIL law of some kind. We see 2.5 years later, obviously that hasn't happened, but Mark Emmert kind of opened the door for congressional involvement. And for years, Paul, we have seen the NCAA and college leaders push back on any congressional involvement, certainly never inviting them in. And Mark Emmert did that. He cracked the door, and the NCAA or Congress has kind of kicked it open. And you kind of knew that was going to happen. I remember when Emmert came up here, I had some athletic directors and a couple of even commissioners say, you watch, you'll be careful what you wish for, when you want congressional involvement. They will dive in and examine and explore every avenue and want to oversee it. And that's what we're seeing. This latest bill is just one of many that wants to operate college athletics, take authority away from college leaders and NCAA leaders and operate college athletics through the federal government. So that's where we are. It kind of started 2.5 years ago over NIL. And yeah, you mentioned it there. Actually tomorrow, Paul, there's a summit that Chris Murphy, you mentioned Chris Murphy earlier, Senator Murphy and several, I think three other Democratic Congress lawmakers are having a summit on all of these things tomorrow, right? They'll talk about NIL. They'll talk about athletes becoming employee status, all that stuff. They'll talk about student athlete health and welfare, postgraduate health care, which is a big topic. To sum it all up, Paul, the Democrats want some kind of large, deep, detailed bill, college athletics bill, that would cover postgraduate health care, NIL, other compensation, and the Republicans want a more streamlined, smaller bill just really to regulate NIL. And that's kind of the fight we're seeing right now is can they come together and find some kind of middle ground? So far, not.
The election is in a couple of months. Does that play any role in this? And what happens depending on the outcome of the election? The midterms, I should say.
Yeah, absolutely. Right, the midterms. Yes, absolutely. And you won't see any movement. You shouldn't probably see any movement on any kind of college athlete bill, NIL bill, maybe even this enforcement bill until after the midterms. That's just the way Congress operates. But the elections will have a significant impact, right? As I just discussed, right, the Democrats want one kind of bill, and the Republicans want another kind of bill. And right now, you've got obviously you've got full Democratic control on the three levels of the legislative government in the executive branch. And if that changes, and Republicans take over or take two of the three of those, House, Senate, and executive, or executive will remain Democratic. But if they take over Congress or take one side of Congress, then yeah, you might see some different movement in some different bills, more smaller bills, streamlined bills, bills that just maybe cover NIL. I had one administrator tell me the only hope for a quick and easy NIL bill to pass next year is with the Republican Congress, because that's what they want. But they just want a streamlined bill. So the election is pivotable, just like the presidential election was for the course of college sports.
Well, you already have a former SEC head coach representing Alabama in the Senate. You could have a former Heisman Trophy winner in Herschel Walker representing Georgia. I don't know if that matters or not, but it's certainly getting rather interesting up there, or could be on the Hill. Hey, Ross, thanks so much for coming on. Always enjoy it.
No problem. Thanks, Paul.
Who else can run? We got Herschel Walker in Georgia. We got Tuberville already in Alabama. Tim Tebow from Florida. That's my guy. Time for him to quit dilly-dallying around and get in Washington. Save this country.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jet's is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. Right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to jetspizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jet's signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Jet's Pizza. Better because it has to be.
Picture this. You arrive at your hotel. You have an important online meeting lined up with clients from all across the country. You have your laptop open, ready to begin, and The Wi-Fi is so terrible, you can't even connect. These types of stressful situations happen all the time, but they don't have to. When you book a room at La Quinta by Wyndham, you have access to their free high-speed Wi-Fi, so you can take care of those critical emails, join your meetings on time, and even unwind by streaming your favorite shows without having to worry. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
Back we go, and Jeff is up next in Ohio.
What's going on, Paul?
Jeff, how are you?
Man, I'm just happy to know that I'm a fan of a school and wanted to have.
Yeah, you're still relevant.
Sounds like the Big Ten's got the Big Ten's in the mix.
Big Ten still kicking.
Yeah. Man, I heard you with Nicole Auerbach. You sounded a little nervous. I mean, were you about ready to get the beeper out when she kept saying the Big Ten so much? I thought you were going to start bleeping it out.
Well, she works for the Big Ten Network, so I'm always nervous when I talk to somebody from there.
Yeah, she'd bring up the Big Ten, and you'd slip right back in the SEC this, SEC
yeah,
that.
Yeah, you know how intimidated we are down here in the South about those Yankees
yeah,
up north.
I give you credit, man. You earned your paycheck. That's for damn sure, Paul.
Yeah, you can say that
I
again.
I mean, you don't let anything slide by the SEC.
No. Man, not going to, Jeff.
No.
Over my dead body.
Yeah.
Whoa.
Right.
I felt something just whiz by my ear.
Right. Hey, I asked you a question last night, Paul, very timely to your Ross Dellinger interview today.
Yeah.
And it's nice to hear. I asked you the exact question, who's going to monitor all this stuff if the NCAA is obsolete? And I'm not excited to have Congress involved, to be honest with you. That scares me a little bit. But somebody's got to do it because these schools have proven they can't trust each other.
Do you want me to give you the solution to the problem?
Sure.
It's very simple. And it's not about getting all these goofballs together in the same room. We've tried that. It comes down to two people in college athletics that need to coalesce in order to save the species, and that is the commissioner of the SEC and the commissioner of the Big Ten. Those are the only two leagues that remain on the top shelf, Jeff, and ultimately I think they'll come together with the preservation. We're not anywhere close to it yet. There's too many issues, and there's too much bad blood because of this stupid alliance that was created a couple of months ago. But ultimately, I do think cooler heads will prevail.
Do you think there's any chance at all that Sankey could retire from the commissioner and him and Delaney would be like the task force of the oversight?
No,
that,
because
to me would be,
it's dangerous to do that, because right now his fiefdom is more valuable than, ultimately it could happen, but there has to be, you see this sometimes in Israel and other countries where you have a prime minister, it's a party, it's party oriented, where the number of people that win in parliament end up, the leader of the party becomes a prime minister, where you might have to have the SEC serve as the head for a year, and then the Big Ten guys serve as a year. Because right now, the college athletics is completely dysfunctional. And before I turned it over to Congress, which is always changing and always evolving.
Right.
You can't trust Congress with something this important. Can't believe
I
just said
that. No, and they all have their special interests too, Paul.
Yeah.
Hell, the guys in the South are going to stick up for the SEC more than you do. And the guys up here in the Midwest are going to stick up for the Big Ten. We know that.
And you can't trust the Pac-12.
It's just too bad Delaney. Pardon me?
You can't trust the Pac-12. The Big 12 is hanging on by a thread, and the ACC commissioner has just shot himself in the foot.
Yeah. Yeah, and like Auerbach said, there's no way either any of those conferences are going to be able to compete with the dollars that the two networks of the SEC and the Big Ten are bringing in. I mean, that's what I've talked to you in the past, and I wish you would talk to these people that talk about the economics. Is the disparity of these athletic programs within the conferences.
No, you're right. Jeff, I hate to run. We're up against the break. Let me give some breaking news. This is bizarre. The Pac-12 just announced it is closing its headquarters down in San Francisco, and everything is going to be done remotely. Does that give you confidence about the future of that league?
Thank you for listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast. The Paul Feinbaum Show airs weekdays on the SEC Network, beginning at 3 Eastern.
10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships, your skills, your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/network.